This podcast features three supposed adults who definitely use adult language. They're also supposedly writers who are definitely not procrastinating by making this podcast. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to No Bad Ideas, the storytelling game show where we take the worst ideas from the internet and try to turn them into stories that are actually good, usually. But today, we have something a little different for you.
I am your first something different host, and my name is Gabriel Urbina.
I am your second different host. My name is Sarah Shackett.
And I am your third different host, Zach Valenti.
And today, we are joined once again by the man, the myth, the European legend. It's Mr. Felix Trench.
Hello. I am mythical.
Well, thank you for taking more time out of your very busy days to spend a little bit of time talking about us.
Thank you for assuming I'm one of the busy people during COVID.
Oh, I think that everyone is busy one way or another, whether it
is. I mean, psychological horror is very busy.
It's that takes up thing. That takes some time. Yeah. You got a pencil in the hours. So Felix, you are kind of one of those jealousy inducing people in the world of podcasting, because at times it seems that you can do pretty much everything. My God, you act in series. You have a lead role in Wooden Overcoats, one of the most popular audio fiction series. You've acted in all manner of shows. You were in the AM archives. You were in our own series, Zero Hours, last year. And not satisfied to conquer the world of performing, you have now also started your own series, which you write and you engineer and you mastermind, called Quid Pro Euro. How does it feel to just be so talented? Like, is there kind of a like distinct feeling in your body?
Does it hurt anywhere?
Yeah.
I'd say it's a feeling. It's sort of like the internal equivalent of sunshine. It's like having a constant combustion of gases peeling up and down each corner of my body, really good, cracking into the tendons. I feel no tension. Never tense. That's what they call me. Never tense trench.
Never
tense. That sounds wonderful.
No, but let's talk a little bit about actually kind of taking that leap from kind of podcast performer to podcast creator. What led to the making and the genesis of Quid Pro Euro? Did you look at all of us that were writing our own shows and kind of going, man, all that pain and insomnia, that sure seems like fun.
That I want to get in on that. Sure looks like you could use some company.
Yeah, I was so seething with jealousy every time I saw someone hunched over a laptop with Final Draft. That's, I still don't have Final Draft. I use like a knockoff Russian Final Draft called Kit Scenarist.
Wow.
Wait, what? Which, I never heard of this before.
Oh, of course you haven't. I'm the only user. Every now and then they send me an update.
This is also incredibly in character and appropriate for Quid Pro Euro, I feel.
Kit Scenarist comes in, like everything these days, it comes in light mode and dark mode, but the difference is Kit Scenarist comes in dark mode by default.
Oh my God, their marketing is only cats, and I love it.
I love it. It's I'm a big fan. So Quid Pro Euro began beginning of last year. I was visiting LA in a kind of recce-ish way that British actors do sometimes. We go out there because we're not getting enough work over here, and we think, oh, maybe I could not get enough work out here instead.
Nice.
And
The same thing happens to us folks in New York. We take those not enough work trips out to LA as well.
Brilliant. I recommend coming east from your perspective and getting no work in London at some point.
Would love to.
Yeah, do come. We have, you know, buildings and that. One thing that occurred to me at the time was that it might be more sensible to start marketing myself as more of a general comedy hand than just actor. So I started chatting to a couple of people I knew out there who were writing for television, and one of them very kindly sat down with me after, like, barely meeting me. And I said, hello, can we talk about how this all works? And she said, yes. And then wrote a massive Google document, shared it with me, and then we had coffee, and it was great.
My God, people are wonderful sometimes.
My God, like, yeah. Her main advice, well, one of her main advices was to do something drawing on my own life and background, which is one of those things that you hear a lot, but then you always kind of think, but that can't apply to me because I'm boring. It's everyone else who's interesting. Mm-hmm. And my specific background is, although I sound like this, I grew up in Belgium and my parents worked for the European Union, which is why I lived in Belgium. So I decided to write something about that, about the Euro bubble in the 90s. And it's sort of, I've been frustrated for a very long time about how EU news, which is, in fairness, very boring, is reported in this country, where people say, because it's boring, we can dismiss it. Mm-hmm. And it tends to get covered rather better in other EU countries, certainly in France and Germany. And the thing is, if something is poorly covered, then you can't satirize it effectively because you don't you don't have the knowledge of it. So I thought I'd have a go at writing something from my perspective. And it kind of came out of that, and I had this this idea of a format, and I got a wonderful producer on board called Zach Fortes Gom, who is also the writer producer of a sci-fi epic space opera podcast called The Orphans, which is all about clones, and in which I play one of his clones.
Lovely.
And what I love about Zach's work is it is so detailed and so involved, and it was exactly what I needed for something that was going to be very narration heavy and was essentially a series of visual gags told entirely through audio. So he provides those visual gags. And that's kind of been it. That's been almost exactly a year. We launched on Europe Day last year, which is the 9th of May. And we're just coming up to 1 year of that with Europe Day 2020. I'm sure you've all got your flags ready.
Absolutely.
Eat your Europe cake.
I want to dig in just a little bit deeper because you kind of, I think, lightly breezed past one of the things that I find the most fascinating about Quid Pro Euro. Because you talked about you had a certain format in mind. And dear listener, if you have not heard Quid Pro Euro yet, I cannot stress how much it is really kind of unlike anything that you have ever heard, because it is both so identifiable as coming out of a vision of the 90s Europe, but also it is very heightened and very kind of exaggerated.
Yeah,
and
I was going to ask, where in your perspective is there sort of an all-powerful cloud dictator named Barracuda?
Barracuda.
And that may just be, I grew up in Costa Rica. Our European history was, you know, very lightly passed over. So maybe have a gap in my knowledge.
We're bad at geography in the States. So.
Yeah, no, Barracuda is just north of Luxembourg.
Oh, good.
Excellent.
Just floating there. What exactly is your question?
I think my question is sort of what led to wanting to do something that was not only capturing Europe in the 90s, but also refracting it and kind of exaggerating it. And
oh, I see. Why is it so silly?
And also a little bit, why is it so sinister at times? You know, it is sort of what were your kind of influences in that regard? And what sort of made you want to approach the story from that angle?
So, yeah, I think there's two streams to that. There is a silliness to it and there is a sinisterness to it that possibly started creeping in a bit later. we touched on it in the last episode. Silly comedy told deadpan is like my favorite thing in the world.
It's glorious.
I think that there have been few comedy performers I've enjoyed as much as like your Leslie Nielsen's, all of those. I would love to see a return to that kind of Aeroplane, Naked Gun kind of aesthetic. I'd love to see people revisiting absolute nonsense where everyone is very somber. But I also grew up reading a lot of like British and Franco-Belgian comics, so be it the Beano or Asterix, or right. I got one called Spirou, which...
Oh, yeah.
You know Spirou?
Yes, that made its way to Central America.
My God, did it? I used to get it delivered.
I could listen to you say the word Spirou all day. I have no idea what that is, if there's any context.
Well, it's interesting. So the Spirou itself was like a serious adventure comic about a bellhop called Spirou, who was also a detective. And it was sort of Tintin-y. But then...
Very kind of a descendant of Hergé, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. But then at the same time, they had a spin-off magazine, which was much more one-page comedy strips. And in that, there was things like... Garage Isidore, which was about a car mechanic. There was Pierre Tombal, which was, funnily enough, that was about a grave digger who always had a little cigarette dangling out of his lip, and he'd talk to all the dead people, and they'd talk back. So, like, early on, that was the sort of thing that I was really getting sense of humour-wise. And then, like, there's an innate nonsense to the European Union in how it presents itself. It is like, so I left Brussels in 2004, which was, 2005. So the year after the enlargement, when we went from a 15 to a 25 member union. And what it has never managed well is PR. It cannot bring forward the idea that over two dozen countries working together in what is essentially a peace project is cool. It is the only ever seems to convey the tediousness and red tape that goes alongside this. And this goes hand in hand with sometimes attempts to talk artistically about the EU, and they're always just a bit crap. It's always like, maybe it's just a question of like, how many official languages do they have now? 25, 26, of having to make one story universally not offensive to everyone.
Of course.
Right.
Means that you're always overcompensating. You're always overcorrecting.
You're defanging it all the way down.
I remember seeing it was probably something to celebrate some EU milestone, and there was a bit of art that clearly hadn't got past the censors, because it was by a Czech artist, and it was what the EU will look like in 15 years' time. And I think actually presciently that the UK was maybe not on that map. Because the UK has always been like the obstreperous one. an obstreperous one anyway. And it was very funny, and I was really taken with it. Because, like, I've always thought, well, one thing that I've long thought anyway, is that the EU project will work or will have worked when we can accurately insult each other.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I have fairly good stereotypes in my head for a Parisian versus a Berliner. Mm-hmm. I have no idea what people say about people from Lisbon or from Riga or whatever. And I would be like beyond like broad, gross cultural stereotypes. So we're very much not at a point of understanding each other yet to the point that we can accurately take the piss. Like, you are always going to be punching down, especially if you're from one of the EU 15 or from one of like the wealthier earlier nations to have been part of that. And so that all leads to, as I was saying, like, certainly back then, I mean, I've not lived there in Brussels for 15 years, but it leads to a certain pompousness in, or is it pomposity? What can you say both?
I think you could say both.
Fantastic, but I think then I will.
To drive it home, pomposity sounds more pompous.
Pomposity. It is. It's got a brass band feel to it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Right.
Pomposity, pomposity kind of feel.
Oompa Loompa's favorite word.
Yeah. There we are.
So taking the piss sounds like the path to peace that has not yet taken place.
Absolutely. That's my solution.
And you said, I will make a show to ring that gong and sound the clarion call and lead the way.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I think that Europe deserves more comedy. It is coming. There's cool stuff happening. Although Norway's not a member of the EU, I've been so excited by. Have you watched any of Norsemen?
No. Yes. Oh my gosh.
I'm thinking of Vikings. I think.
Yeah. No. This is very different.
Yeah.
Although watching like similar Vikings, costumes. Watching Vikings will help you watch Norsemen.
Okay.
It is an absolutely bonkers comedy about Vikings. But as you say, Felix, sort of very ridiculous perspectives played very, very seriously.
Yeah, it's like Vikings meet The Office sort of thing. And they recorded each episode in both Norwegian and English. It's the original cast speaking in English.
Oh, wow.
Yes, so that they could release it to an international audience. And if more countries start taking advantage of the internet and international distribution mechanisms like that, I think there is exciting stuff to come, which means we feel slightly less shackled to the tropes of the Anglosphere. Because at the minute, we kind of, everything has to be translated back through the brains of people who grew up speaking English as a first language, which comes with a certain baggage. Yeah. Which is different to the baggage of a francophone or a nalandophone or whatever.
Absolutely. Well said.
So selfishly, yeah. I'm interested to know, I think the difference between just generally being a funny person and comedy is timing. Where did you learn your timing? Because it is fucking on, I think is the technical term.
Thank you very much. I'm going to be a dick and say that I don't believe in comic timing.
Please.
Hot take.
I believe in truth. And I think that ultimately, I believe in, no, I'm being slightly, what's the word?
Obstreperous.
But good writing is not repeating, Gabrielle, unless you repeat it twice, in which case it becomes good writing again. So we need to use a third obstreperous, or it looks like a mistake. um, Yeah, I think that there is such a thing as comedy rhythms, and there is truth. I worry about... So comedy rhythms is where something is said in such a way that we recognize it as this is the setup to a joke. Here comes the punchline. We all laugh. And it's that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's almost a social bonding thing. But when it comes down to performance, if you start relying too much on comedy rhythms, I think audiences can tell that. Whereas if you work towards... If it's a good script, if you work towards being true to that script and being true, especially to the stakes and not sending up your character at any moment.
When you say sending up, you mean like hamming it up or like overacting?
Exactly. Just be like, if someone is a naturally angry character, then you don't want to apply a wash of anger to everything they say. You're looking in this scene, basically like, how are they making the other characters in the scene feel? What is the purpose of this scene to the overall script? Like, it's go back to the script, back to the script, back to the script. And eventually you'll hopefully find a middle ground between the author's intention and your own creativity and manage to marry the two. And I don't believe that you'll ever get there 100%, but it's certainly something that's worth striving towards. And if you've written it, then it's easier.
Yeah, I was going to say, how much easier is it when you are the author as well?
I mean, like for QPE, I do no work on the script because I've written it. It's great. But for anything else, like Overcoats, that's quite a lot of pre-recording prep, going through just like line by line, unit by unit, try to work out. I'll quietly perform all the other characters to myself to try to figure out how they're being made to feel. And then that teaches you that you can kind of turn that up to 11. So if someone is feeling a bit neglected, you go, oh, great, I can just literally turn my back on you. Or whatever. But when it comes to writing, I've had one experience of it being harder when I'm doing the writing, which was I did a storytelling show, which I did for a month in, 2014, maybe. And it was a one-hour show about a radio DJ who lived in a narrowboat. And by the end of the month, I was literally like, I'd forget where I was. I felt like a shopping list. I found it really difficult to keep that fresh. And I think something about the fact that I'd written it made me doubt the text a lot more than when there's someone else that you can be accountable to and go, okay, I'm doing this for blah.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
Good. I'm just checking, this is still recording. Do you get that fear? That
yes.
You didn't press it all the time. So often?
All the time.
I get that fear because I've had that happen. And sure. It's a healthy fear.
It's like the podcasting equivalent of having left the gas on, which I've never worried about in my life.
Well, speaking of one fears, has producing something influenced your process as a writer and actor at all, or just more work?
As in creating my own show?
Yes.
I think it has, maybe not the process of putting the work in. One thing it's really highlighted, and perhaps you've seen this as well to me, is the way that if you create your own work, you get a kind of unfair advantage in the industry.
Hmm.
And I see so many of my peers who are wonderful actors, but are not technically minded. It's just, it wasn't their thing growing up. Like, I grew up taking apart my computer and putting in like new RAM or whatever. And so I feel comfortable around a computer. But if you don't have that, or you don't have an interest in PR or theatre or production or whatever, and all you've done is focus on going to more classes, practicing scripts, becoming a better actor, in some ways that puts you at a real disadvantage over the people who are not focusing on their craft. And like, I've realized that putting in the hours for Quid Pro Euro has meant that a lot of my acting career stuff has had to take a back seat. So after this May episode, I'm taking a break for 3 months, like purely because, and I'm sure that you found this as well, a podcast expands to fill every hour of your month. And if it's a monthly thing,
oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's extraordinary, isn't it? Like the first week you do it in, you get all like the added extras and the Patreon rewards and whatever done in 4 minutes. And you're like, well, great, I found a sustainable business model. And then it just kind of, like, there's this accordion effect.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
This absolutely.
This is how God laughs at all podcasters' plans.
So, Felix, now that you have done it all, now that you have created a show, written for it, acted for it, had disagreements with your director, who is also yourself, I'm curious, what advice would you give to someone that is looking to create their own fiction show? Sort of what guidance or possibly what warning would you give them?
It's hard not to be glib and just say be lucky.
No, but like, I'm glad that no, you said I it mean, like, let it be recorded, and we'll ask you for the second part of the answer too, but it's important to acknowledge that's a part of it.
It's a huge part of it. I think that we are all born with our own circumstances, and if you have some aces in the hold to play them. I'd say, like, learn and surround yourself with people that you respect. Those are the things that kind of keep me going are the kind of excitement that you never get to the end of the education. I'm taking a voiceover course at the minute on a service called Gravy for the Brain, which I recommend because it is cheap compared to most of them. I think they're currently doing £35 a month, something like that. And that will take you through. It is more geared towards voiceover artists than voice actors, who are, for listeners who don't know, the difference there is the difference between the person who says, coming next, and the person who says, ow, my foot. might be the same person. Coming next, my foot. and like, finding the people who you think are doing genuinely good work, and not just work that you're happy that they're doing work, but like stuff that you go, yeah, that seems to me to be good. And trying to work with them, and also it kind of has to be people of your school year, as it were, like people who are in a different discipline, but at a similar level, be it career-wise or knowledge-wise, as you, because there are, unfortunately, there are power dynamics in the industry which are not spelled out to anyone. It's one of
yeah.
It's one of must be one of the worst industries for making the career ladder completely invisible and pretending that there isn't one. I was watching a casting director workshop today, and the chap on it, the casting director, was talking about the difference in casting someone, like doing an audition with someone who'd just come off like a West End run and maybe was a regular on a soap and full of pep and energy, and this is a perfectly normal thing for them. And then someone who was maybe a recent graduate and this is the biggest thing in their life. And no one, when you are that recent graduate, tells you that the more work you get, the easier this will be, and you don't, like, you don't have to be nervous. There is this sort of weird idea in the arts and storytelling forms that it's all completely democratic, and it isn't. The people who have created the work and become producers inevitably then become gatekeepers. And I think you can and should work to make that not a thing. And there is a lot of talk that I have seen about putting the hand down to help people up the invisible ladder. But at the same time, you can help yourself by working with your peers.
Well said.
I guess it comes down to make your thing, isn't it? Or make good art. That's the Neil Gaiman thing.
There we are.
Yes. But I enjoyed the Felix Trench travel route to get to it. Thank you. That was, I think, genuinely quite helpful and absolutely true, every syllable of it.
Oh, good. I put in one lying syllable. See if you can guess.
Well, Felix, it has been amazing to get to talk to you and to get to mine your brain and your knowledge and your wonderful, wonderful voice.
Thank you.
If people want to hear more of that wonderful, wonderful voice, what is the best way to do that? Where should they go to find your work?
I would recommend going finding Quidpro Euro on any podcast app. And I am at Felix Trench on all the socials. And sometimes I do silly videos and you'll hear my voice if I do a silly video.
Excellent. Excellent.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show. And thank you, everyone, for tuning in.
Thank you.
This has been No Bad Ideas, produced by Gabrielle Urbina, Sarah Shackett, and Zach Valente. Many thanks to our patrons for their partnership in making this show happen. And a special shout out to our Idealist members, Rena Sarame and Jennifer Schneider. Today's episode features music by State Shirt and Jazar from freemusicarchive.org. You can support the show at nobadideaspodcast.com/support. And if you love this show, please leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Thanks.